I hereby introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. Today I'm talking to Joshua Price of SuspensionExperts.com about that very important, the elephant in the room, which is the possibility of getting your Amazon account suspended, which, as I said before, most people either ignore it and bury their head in the sand, or they run scared like Chicken Little and the sky's falling on their head. And the truth is, of course, like any good business, you really got to just look at the reality and then deal with it in an appropriate way. And of course, you need an expert to do that rather than just thinking you can handle everything yourself with no further input. So Joshua is going to talk through with us about the exact details. Now, you have various different grounds for suspension, and if you haven't heard those, then listen to the previous episode where we talked about the overview of the process of what happens when you get suspended. So now we're going to plunge into detail. So Joshua, just remind us the big picture first. What are the two sort of broad areas that you mentioned which can cause your account to get suspended?
Of course. So we have performance, which is about the operations. That's customer facing. Amazon monitors that with what they call metrics. It's information you can see, you can track. It's data about customers, about orders, and those sort of things. The other side is policy, which is about Amazon's rules, the regulations, and the things that you have to follow. So keeping to those, almost like Amazon laws.
Great. Okay. Well, let's deal with first of all, let's deal with the most common or the biggest, most likely problem. Which area is where you see and deal with most suspensions?
Sure. I deal mainly with inauthentic suspensions and intellectual property rights owner complaints. Those are
okay,
the
which would that
most
come under
common.
Then?
I'd say that's a policy.
Okay. Issues.
I'd say those are the most common for larger sellers. For small sellers, it's always going to be your ODR, because you just can't avoid those suspensions if you're doing lower volumes of orders.
So just to break down, I have a policy on the podcast to try and not have any TLAs. That's three letter abbreviation. So ODR is?
Order defect, right?
Order defect, right. Thank you. Just to try and make sure that we understand what the hell is going on. I was discussing suspension with somebody the other day in the mastermind, and they talked about POA for about 10 minutes before I realized, ding, plan of action rather than price on application. I was thinking, we're starting to get estate agents here. Let's talk then. So that's for the smaller sellers, I mean, which is obviously by the nature of things going to be the bigger number of people, particularly listen to the show. I know it's a real mix of people that listen to the show, but quite a lot of people who are just starting out. So tell us about the dreaded order defect rate suspension then. So you've already talked a little bit about that before. What's the detailed response? So let's take a concrete situation. Let's say I'm doing about, you know, $20,000 a month, which is not untypical for somebody in their first few months, on Amazon.com. I'm UK based, and then I get the dreaded suspension notice, and it says it's to do with order defect rate. Well, the first question is, how would I even know what they're talking about? What the reason is for suspension? How do we figure that out? Do they tell us in some very plain way, or do we have to guess?
Amazon will tell you the reason for the suspension. It may not be entirely clear for you to what that actually means, but they do tell you what it is, and it's in the first line of the notification that you receive. It's something like, we've removed your Amazon selling privileges because of, and for order defect rate, it will say because your order defect rate is above the 1% target.
Okay. So what other words might they use? So the first question, I suppose, is to figure out which of those issues you've hit, which is the violation that they think you've done. So which other words might they use at that point that we might have to decode? It sounds like order defect rate is just told plainly.
Yeah. And for most performance suspensions, it's quite plain. They use the terminology that will be reflected in the account health dashboard. So for late dispatch, it says late dispatch. For cancellation rate, it says cancellation rate. All these sort of things that for most sellers you'll be familiar with, as long as you've had a good poke around the account health side of Seller Central. So in that regard, it's easy to work out why. They tell you, and you can literally log into your account and you'll be able to see your order defect rate will be 3%. Well, that's more than one. It kind of makes sense. On the policy side, they tend to use technical language and terminology, which won't explain for most people what's actually gone on. So inauthentic complaints, intellectual property rights owner complaints, and then a myriad of other more sort of small and complicated policy issues as well. So they will often use the language that's in their policies, which of course is very legal and complicated language.
Right. Okay. Well, that's interesting. So, I mean, the first thing to say is that if it's going to be a performance issue, it'll be pretty clear as long as, and this is a very big, as long as, or big if you are familiar with what goes on in your account health. So if you're not, then that's the first thing, presumably, that everyone should do right now, right? So to make sure they're familiar with the terminology and the numbers that Amazon is tracking. But we'll talk about suspension prevention in the next segment, the next episode. But I mean, that's obviously a bit of an obvious one that you've just flagged up. So let's continue down the performance notifications path. So that's basically led by metrics. And again, that's a very important thing for us to just bear in mind, that if our numbers are wrong, that pushes us towards the danger of a performance-based suspension. And if we're doing more complicated wrong things, then that's a more policy-based thing. So tell us more about that. So if we've got an order defect rate suspension, we can tell that because it says order defect rate. And if we looked in our Amazon Seller Central backend under account health, we'll be familiar with that word or that set of words and those numbers. So then what do we do next? We've got to do research, as you suggested before. Yeah. What exact numbers are we looking at or things?
Of course. Well, let me explain about how an order defect rate is composed, how Amazon calculates that figure. So it's the number of negative and neutral feedbacks. Noting neutral, often people make an assumption it's just the negatives. So that's people that leave a 1-star, 2-star, or 3-star review about your service, not the product review, about the service, you as a seller. They then add the number of A to Z claims as the sort of Amazon's guarantee program for dissatisfied customers. They add that, and they also add chargeback claims, which is chargebacks from a credit card company. Those are pretty uncommon, as most people just use the A to Z guarantee as a way of getting their money back.
Okay.
Amazon adds those up and then divides it by the number of orders that you've taken in a period, a 30-day period and a 90-day period. And that gives them a percentage. So for 30 days and 90 days, both need to be under a 1%. So obviously it means, for example, at Christmas, often you'll sell more orders. And so you're going to then potentially receive more complaints in the couple of months after the orders. So often January, February are really peak times for suspension from order defect rates. And that's because you had your 30-day sales will actually be quite low in January, but you'll receive a lot of complaints from the orders you had in December.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Yeah. So doing a lot of business is not just an unqualified good. And there are various reasons for that. I mean, cash flow is one of them, which Will Churnland flags up very, very clearly whenever he speaks, that I'm not hearing speaking or discuss with him. The other one, of course, the exposure to risk of a dissatisfied customer is obviously greater when you have more products out there. So that tells us when it's likely to come up and why. And then specifically in response to an order defect rate, what would you do next? What other data you need to gather?
Yeah. Well, now you understand the pieces of data that Amazon are using to calculate it. We need to actually look at why those customers have those complaints. So this is literally going to the negative feedback section of Seller Central, reading the 1, 2, and 3-star reviews and understanding the complaints. And for most people, there'll be a theme for people's complaints, because people would explain that it was maybe about a slow delivery. And if you've got a lot of people complaining about slow delivery, well, there is the problem. Occasionally it'll be varied and then probably leads to signs that you have sort of bigger issues. But if it's all about delivery, then you know that's the problem. And so for A to Z guarantee claims, again, if it's not received and you've got 7 not received complaints, well, that's where the issue lies. And that is the research we need to do to work out where the problem is. So if it's non-received, for example, that is then what you need to plan for and explain about to Amazon.
Okay. Sorry, Dan, you're going to have a lot of work on this one, mate. Get in touch if you need to check with me what to do, but sneeze is definitely the editing out. So, let me give a little gap. Sorry, Daniel. Daniel's my long-suffering editor, by the way.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Most of the time he's okay. This has been a bit of worse tech-wise, most of the... So the A to Z delivery claims are, A to Z guarantee claims, I should say, are one of the places you could really look for some themes. And of course, the feedback themselves. That makes a lot of sense. So if it's themed around one particular issue, then presumably that we have to guess that that's the reason for suspension, do we? We don't actually get anything as specific from Amazon as your order defect rate is too high. And the reason for that is because of late delivery. Do they actually spell it out to that degree, or do we have to kind of make that leap of logic?
We definitely have to make that leap ourselves. Amazon don't give you the specifics, and in policy it becomes even more vague as well.
Okay, thank you. Well, that's good to know what we can take from Amazon and what we have to work out for ourselves. So yeah, Amazon seems to is like playing poker with a bear or something, isn't it? It's all Russian roulette sometimes. But that's how it feels to me. But I'm presumably you're much more savvy about it, and you're an expert poker player. It's okay. So what do we do next then? So we've seen the theme, and that's an incredibly helpful and clarifying thing. So let's say that it's about slow delivery, and we're doing FBM, fulfilled by merchant, and we're doing our own deliveries. We're using the post office. Let's say it's in the UK to keep life simple. We're using the Royal Mail, and Royal Mail has backed up because it's Christmas and was just slow. So what do we need to do next after realizing what the precise issue is that's kicked this off?
Great. So now it's time to appeal. And that's going to be a page maximum of explanation about what's happened and how you're going to fix it. So we typically I like to split this in when I'm writing appeals into three parts of the appeal. So the first one is telling Amazon what they've told you, and then you're telling them how you've come to your conclusion, right? So we've just spoken about making that leap. So I always start a letter with, I've been suspended because of, and then use Amazon's exact terminology for the suspension. And then I'm gonna write about the cause. In this case, I've had a look at the negative feedbacks, I've had a look at the A to Z claims, and the suspension, the high ODR or order defect rate was caused by late delivery or slow delivery. And then we need to give more detail about how we're going to fix that problem. So if we conclude that it's the fault of the Royal Mail in the UK being slow for deliveries, we can explain that. It's totally fine to point fingers and say where the problem lies exactly. And then we need to come up with a 5 to 10 point plan about how we're going to address that issue and make sure this can never, ever, ever happen again. And everything that we write at this point in this plan is going to be stuff that you've done. So it's not, oh, in the future, at some point when I get round to it, I might bother doing this. It's been definitely implemented. You've done it already. And you're very certain about the action that you're taking and the way that it's going to fix the problem.
Okay.
So for that specific issue, I'll give a couple of points that would typically be used to help fight that. One would be changing your courier, whoever you use for shipping, or adding an option for faster delivery into the account. So maybe that means you do have to up the prices in the account, for example, to accommodate using UPS or DHL or whoever you prefer to use. Another solution will be about following an order and tracking an order. Amazon love tracking numbers if you're not sending them to tracked. And then keeping your customer service team on the orders and making sure that things are arriving on time and that you're caring for customers. And following the item, the parcel, from dispatch all the way through to delivery. Amazon quite like the idea that you're doing that for the customers.
Okay, interesting. And so some very, very precise things. And So just to reflect back, because I think this is so important for people to get this stuff clear. So you've got three parts. The first one, you basically reflect back to them their own language. Second part, you link that to what you think is the specific cause. For example, the order defect rate was caused by late delivery. You can point some fingers, which is obviously helpful, but not enough. And then you've got a very specific plan of action. So first of all, to prevent it ever happening again is not just a kind of close enough, you've got to already done it and you've got to sound very certain, which, by the way, I think it reflects any good customer service issue in general. I mean, if somebody comes to me and says the product's a problem, I normally like to write back to them and say, not I will give you a refund, but I've given you a refund, here's a screenshot to prove it, and if you have any other issues, come back to us, we take this very seriously. So it's the same kind of tone, isn't it, really? Like, we take it seriously, we've dealt with it rather than we're going to.
Yeah, agreed.
Great. Okay. Well, that's very, very clear. Now, one obvious question, especially for those who listen to the show, obviously it's called Amazing FBA Fulfilled by Amazon. So that implies that my main model and the one that I would encourage anyone to follow sooner or later is to have stuff fulfilled by Amazon rather than fulfilled by merchants. So in that situation, if Amazon's done its own mess up and has delivered stuff late, what can we do if Amazon suspended our account because they've delivered our products late? I mean, A, does that happen? And B, if so, what mm-hmm. can we do about that?
It shouldn't happen. There's a couple of sort of steps that Amazon have put into the plan to avoid the sort of a suspension being caused by it. So for example, as I said, the order defect rate is composed of your negative feedbacks. Well, if an item was delivered by Amazon, you can get the feedback removed if Amazon were at fault, and therefore that reduces, takes it off the metrics, and you can't sort of receive a suspension if there's nothing wrong with the metrics. So that is one reason for it. If it's definitely Amazon's fault, while it's never ideal to point fingers at Amazon, the suspension in that case would probably be an error. And again, it's fine to say, I think there's a problem here. You know, can you have a look at it for me to Amazon? And, you know, people can get just reinstated almost straight away if it is an error.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think you've just touched on something which a lot of people don't know, which is incredibly important. I mean, I've had, obviously, over the time I've been selling, a lot of negative feedback ends up on your account sooner or later if Amazon messes up, because the punter, the customer, I should say, who's buying doesn't really know, that doesn't really differentiate between you as a third-party seller and Amazon. They simply buy stuff on Amazon, then it doesn't turn up on time, they're angry, and they leave negative feedback. And, of course, you can go in and ask for that to be removed. And as far as my experience goes, that's almost instantaneous. It will stay on there, but with a line through it, and the number, you know, it doesn't count towards your star rating, as it were, for your feedback. But it's very important that you know that that exists and that you are meticulous about cleaning that up, because otherwise you're needlessly exposing yourself to suspension risk, I guess. That deals with one area. Now, I was going to split this up in a different way, but I think it makes sense to say, if you are dealing with an order defect rate side of things, first of all, you pointed out it's pretty common reason for a suspension, particularly for the smaller sellers. And so let's talk about prevention. So how, well, I've already touched on that because it seemed like an obvious thing to flag up from my own experience. What other things do we need to do to put in place to minimize the possibility of this happening in the first place?
Yeah. Well, FBA is brilliant, and it does solve a lot of these problems on the performance side. And so, you know, as you've obviously you've said, that is the main focus. It's what you champion, and I'd agree with that to quite a large extent. So if you are worried about sort of performance side of things, and a lot of, you know, people don't have access to the resources on their end to be able to sometimes meet Amazon's targets, then having your products in FBA is great. And as I said, order defect rate suspensions don't typically occur for FBA sellers. Fulfilled by Amazon's a platform that is designed to provide great service, and so we don't have service complaints.
Right.
That doesn't mean that you're totally safe. There's a huge amount of policy issues that will affect those type of sellers that are fulfilled through Amazon. And if anything, it's worse because you don't have the stock yourself. And so it's sometimes harder to be fixing those problems. And I've had a couple of questions about removing stock from fulfillment as a sort of solution to Amazon's complaints and all these sort of things. And that gets really expensive, and I think it's a big worry. Blocked ASINs and all these type of issues can cause those sort of things.
All right. Well, let's break that down a little bit. So let's talk about the other main reasons. So under the performance, so we've got the big division between performance and policy violations. What are the other big issues under performance? We talked about order defect rate. What are the other things that could happen?
Sure. Well, cancellation rate, but I mean, to be honest, most of performance is going to affect merchant fulfilled. There's, you know, that's why FBA is great. You're not going to have these issues. But for merchant fulfilled, cancellation rate is often a big one. If you don't manage your stock correctly, then you can get suspended for cancelling orders. Most of the time, it is because you won't be able to fulfill them. And another one is the late dispatch rate. So Amazon gives you 48 hours once the order's placed to send the item. And if you don't do that, their target's 4% for that specific thing.
Okay. So it sounds like a great number of issues could be overcome simply by going to FBA while it comes to the performance side anyway. Tell me a little bit about order defect rate as regards, you know, are there other ways that people could presumably that there can be a defect that is not about the delivery system per se, but the product itself? Now, how does that come under? Does that come under performance defects or would that come under some policy violations?
Well, in theory, it shouldn't have anything to do with the order defect rate, but customers are the people making these complaints, and customers don't understand the intricacies and the complex different things that we have as sellers to deal with, the fact that there's so many different channels of complaints and giving feedback and all these things. So while negative feedback, typically you don't have this issue, as you mentioned, removal of feedback's crucial, as well as being able to remove negative feedback for orders that were fulfilled by Amazon. You can also remove product reviews left as service feedback. And therefore, negative feedback generally doesn't have any impact if it's a product issue. A to Z claims can and do. We're seeing an increase in the staff at Amazon seller, customer support being encouraged to open A to Z claims to resolve issues. And this is leading to some problems. But again, in theory, if everything's followed correctly, it shouldn't be an issue. But it can be. It can be a product problem. And if you're suspended for order defect rate and it's because you've got lots of product complaints, well, then you need to almost treat it like a not an order defect rate suspension, but treat it like a suspension because of a safety concern with the product or an inauthentic item or whatever.
Okay, so tell us more about that. So you mentioned a couple of things, so safety and authentic. We've got, I'm just looking at the sort of list of stuff. And by the way, this is, if people want to review, this is on your website, which I think explains this stuff nice and clearly. But let's talk about, which is suspensionexpert.com, that's right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I would encourage experts with an S, experts. Is that right? Right, okay. Right. So I would encourage anyone who's really needing to look into this in detail or wants to be cautious, and that's a wise thing, I think, these days, then I'd encourage you to look at that. That front page is very helpful. But let's talk about, which is suspensionexpert.com, that's right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I would encourage experts with an S, experts. Is that right? Right, okay. Right. So I would encourage anyone who's really needing to look into this in detail or wants to be cautious, and that's a wise thing, I think, these days, then I'd encourage you to look at that. That front page is very helpful. But let's talk about the other things. So we talked about policy violations. So would you say that the inauthentic items problem is a policy violation? And what does that mean in English?
Of course. Yes. So it comes under the policy category. Obviously, Amazon have written in their policy that you can't be selling fake, inauthentic, counterfeit items, as is also, you know, the law. So that is a thing that most sellers will try and avoid for obvious reasons. But Amazon use the term inauthentic a bit too freely, in my opinion. They assign it to things where they've received complaints that may suggest it was inauthentic, even if it definitely is a genuine product. That's from a reputable supplier, manufacturer, etc. So, for example, if you received a product review on an item and the customer said something along the lines of, you know, the item I received was fake, the packaging was different from when I purchased it in a retail shop, that would trigger sort of alarm bells from Amazon's perspective to suggest that maybe you sent them an inauthentic or counterfeit product. And that's when you would receive that type of suspension.
Okay. And so what would you do in response to that particular situation? What's the correct response?
Mm-hmm. So Amazon will ask for invoices as part of their initial notification. And this is a sort of a quick aside, but this is really, really important, is to have your invoices, have them ready to go, ready to be sent, and make sure that all of the information is correct. Often we think that maybe just for accounting and it doesn't matter if there's an error here or there and the supplier didn't put all the correct information, but it matters so, so much. A couple of points here then. The address on your invoices must be, the billing address must be the same address that you have in your Amazon account. that really streamlines the process. Second thing is to have the items very clearly identified. No SKUs or codes or anything that doesn't make any sense. It must almost, if possible, say the item title exactly the same as on the listing.
This is for the SKU, the SKU, is it?
For SKUs. So you don't want to make them coded. You don't want to make an invoice confusing. It needs to be really clear. And then the third thing is the quantity that's got to be very visible on there. Now, many people buy from China, and therefore they get invoices that look like they're maybe made on spreadsheets in Excel and don't have all the details, are very unclear. They might not even be in English. And it's at that stage when you need to be fixing those problems long before you've actually got to send them to Amazon. It really, really helps if you've got great invoices, and it's going to speed up this process, reduce the loss in sales, etc. So if you've got the inauthentic suspension, you need to be sending invoices, and Amazon will give you the specifics for what they require. And then alongside that, you need to provide them with a plan. Now, as we were saying before about making that leap and making the problem smaller, you've got to explain why you received the complaints. So even if the product is genuine, and we all hope it is, you need to explain why someone might have complained. So that could be, for example, that it got damaged. So while it was being shipped to the customer, it was damaged, and that would explain why it looked different when they received it to what they'd used to been used to receiving. Or maybe the wrong item was shipped to them. It doesn't mean that the item that you have is inauthentic or you don't have genuine stock, but it just could have been a mistake. And so we then provide a plan of action that reflects the issues that the customer described and sort of eradicates the problem of inauthenticity.
Right, it makes sense. I know there's a couple of interesting things that really, again, reflect on the delivery process. And sometimes, again, let's assume that you're using FBA because, as we've discussed, that it saves you from a lot of issues. So fulfilled by Amazon rather than merchant fulfilled. If the item gets damaged in shipping, or they've picked the wrong item in the Amazon warehouse, which I know does, you know, both things do occur more often than you'd like. I mean, to be fair, they handle millions, if not hundreds of millions of items a day, and they're pretty amazing systems, but they do make mistakes. In those situations, again, it comes down to Amazon, fulfilled by Amazon specifically, has made those mistakes, but now the customer's coming back, which from the customer's perspective, understandably saying, I ordered this black Staedtler pen and you actually sent me a black pen, but it's by Rexel. And it is inauthentic from their point of view, but the reason is because the picking was wrong in the warehouse. How would you unpick that, and how would you put that to Amazon?
Sure. Well, if for every item that ends up in one of Amazon's warehouses, it came from the seller, whether you use some sort of, you know, through shipping or whatever. But essentially, from Amazon's perspective, you had the item and you sent it to them. And while they do make mistakes, there's no way for them to prove or for you to prove that it wasn't your error in the first place. And so that's typically where we want to go with this, because, as you said, they do an amazing job most of the time, and you're one seller. You can't point fingers at the whole system that Amazon has. You've got no evidence to say that it actually was them. So for an example, an item that was damaged in shipping, rather than blaming Amazon, maybe the packaging that you sent them the product in wasn't sufficient. Maybe it was damaged in transit from your warehouse to Amazon's warehouse. Maybe the product packaging itself was not in the correct poly bag or whatever. And the same thing for the wrong item being picked. Maybe it was labeled incorrectly by you or your supplier or whatever. So we try and bring it back to a place where we had control, because then we can fix it. Whereas we can't fix it when it's the product out of our control. So regardless of what your personal opinion is on whether it was Amazon or whether it wasn't Amazon, we've got to try and bring it back to something that we can solve, because that's how we get the account back.
Yeah, and also the good thing about that is it's making your business stronger, because if there's a possibility, for example, if you send things in I don't know, cardboard boxes that you know, cartons that are, say, you know, a quarter of a centimeter thick, and Amazon manages to bash them around in the warehouse, and then your customer complains that the packaging is not as it was advertised, then, you know, in future, it protects your own business from Amazon to actually solve that for yourself anyway. So it's kind of a double win. Not only are you hoping to get reinstated, but you will genuinely protect yourself if Amazon does manage to throw the products around the warehouse in a game of football. You know, not that I'm sure they don't do that, but, you know, it does occasionally feel like they might. So it makes a lot of sense. So let's plunge on into the policy violation side of things. And I think we're going to do that in a separate episode, because that might be something that specific people are going to need some help with that. So we'll address that in the next episode. Hi, this is Michael Veazey from Amazing FBA. I've got a quick one for you. If you're super stoked and awesomely excited to sell on Amazon, that's great. But if you're American, I'm afraid you need to stop listening, because this one is for the Brits only. I'm not being biased, but this is because I'm talking about something which is based in London. So you're going to need to be in Britain or near Britain to take advantage of it. The basic problem we have as internet entrepreneurs is we are lonely and isolated, because we're tapping, sadly, at our tablets on our own. We're cooped up with our computers and we're going insane with the internet. We need to connect to other people. It's only a human thing, right? And relationships are the basis of all good business. So if you are in that situation, keep listening, because we have a solution called the Amazing FBA London Mastermind. But I'm going to specifically talk to you if you're in that situation, but you are yet to launch on Amazon. So you want to launch on Amazon, you haven't got there yet. This is exactly for you. It's called the Zero to Hero Pre-Launch Mastermind. And our aim is very simple: to get you from research or importing, or even if you've got products on the way to Amazon, to launch with your first product live on Amazon. That's our goal. That's our focus. How do we achieve that? Very simple. We have a face-to-face meeting of up to 15 people, no more than that. So it's very, very focused. And you get 30 minutes minimum to talk about your business and focus on the single issue that's blocking you that month to move you forward. The other way we keep you accountable is that we have a video accountability call once a month as well, which it goes in between the physical meetups, so that we keep that momentum going, because momentum's everything, guys. As you know, on your own, you just lose the dream and you fall into slowness, and then the business just dies from neglect. So we do the opposite. We keep it moving. We keep each other motivated. We inspire, and we tell the truth about what doesn't work so other people can learn from it. We also have a couple of other things. I give an exclusive newsletter available only to members of the Mastermind, where I share the latest tips, techniques, and tricks, and bigger strategies that I'm trying on my Amazon businesses, and tell you what works and frankly what doesn't work as well, so you can learn from my mistakes. And of course, there's an exclusive Facebook group to share all this good stuff with each other in between the meetings and the accountability calls. So there's a ton on offer here. It's obviously going to be very limited because it's maximum 15 people anyway, but for the first 5 people who come on board, there will be a special deal and a very special price for life. But that's obviously only for the first 5 people who come on board. So if you want to check it out, just go to amazingfba.com/London Mastermind, and you can find out there more about it. You can apply there as well if you want to. And if you move fast, you might even be one of the lucky first 5 people to take advantage of it as well. So that's amazingfba.com/London Mastermind. I'm going to put this video out to everyone on my podcast and everyone in the Facebook group, of which we've got nearly 900 members now, and on the YouTube channel. So I imagine that this will fill quite quickly. So if you're serious about it, get yourself over to amazingfba.com/London Mastermind, and you can find. Thanks for listening.